I suggest now that we listen to Professor Michael Pewitt on interpreting ancestors in the Liji.
Great, thank you so much. Let me also begin by thanking Anne and Stefan for putting this together. It's a tremendously exciting conference, and also at a larger level, thank you for all the work you're doing in terms of reading these chapters, bringing translations to the larger world. This is one of those key texts that we surprisingly don't really read a lot, and the larger world outside of Chinese studies never reads. So thank you for the work you're doing, and hopefully finally beginning to change this. My deep thanks. So what I'll be speaking of today very briefly is from a larger project I've been involved with, really trying to look at several chapters of the Liji in terms of the larger debates about ritual and sacrifice going on from the Warring States through the Eastern Han period. And my concern here has been to try to, very much along the lines of the other talk so far today, to really try to see these materials from the Liji as part of this debate, trying to figure out what at the time they would have meant, why they were being argued, why they are then being picked up and put together into a text that we now know as the Liji during the Western Han, and then in the Eastern Han, how this is being both read and actively employed. This is, needless to say, a huge project, so what I'll be doing today is just giving you a little piece of this, focusing in particular on what I call the sacrifice chapters, by which I mean the texts, the chapters, the Jifa, the Ji, the Jitong, the Li Yun, I do put in this, and the Tang Gong as well, which I'm arguing do give you a very telling sense of a vision of ritual that is going to be, I think, very significant in terms of this larger development I'm talking about. And to set up the argument, let me just quickly give a bit of background in terms of what we are now finding through excavated materials that I think are giving us a little bit more of the tip of this iceberg, of this much larger debate. And let me simply begin very briefly with a Gordian text very well known by this point, the Xingzhen Mingchu, that I want to mention just briefly because I think it is very telling of these larger debates. So I'm sure this is a text all of you have read, so I'll be extremely brief. In the Xingzhen Mingchu, the argument in a nutshell is there is a world of wu, of things, and Dao, sort of movement, begins when things interact. When things interact, they are, and obviously the main concern of the text is with humans, they pull out, chew, pull out, drag out, different responses from each other. Those responses the text will call qing, sort of dispositional responsiveness. By definition, the text is arguing implicitly, many of these responses are poor for humans. And then the concern for the text is, how do we learn to respond well? Moving from, as the text will put it, moving from qing to yi, responding properly. And the text will then give you an argument for why you get the development of this canon that it's claiming has now been put together by the Shengren, and the sages, or arguably the sage, Confucius. And the argument is, what has happened is figures at various times have done things that later figures realize to have led to some kind of good interaction. Those actions are then taken out and put into something special. To get to ritual very quickly, since it'll be the key argument here, you take an action, it seems to have worked, you pull that out, and then you have the later generations repeat that action. The goal of which is, by having later generations repeat that action, you are altering their qing. You are refining it. You are, to go at something only, I think, implicit in the Xingzhen Mingchu, but very important for the Liji chapters I'll be discussing, you extend them. You try to alter these dispositional responses in some ways for the better. And then the argument is, as these sort of things taken out, the yue, the shi, the shu, and the li, as these have been taken out of the interactions of humans over the many centuries, they have then been again put together by the Shengren into some kind of a canon that if the latter generations continue to follow, it will somehow improve the world. Now, clearly, of many things that are intriguing in this, but clearly one of the things that's striking is this is indeed, just to pick up on a term that's popped up repeatedly, very much a constructionist vision. You are trying to transform the world. There is clearly not in fact, I'll even put it more strongly, there absolutely is not any kind of, going back to Stefan's earliest point, a foundational view here. There's not a view that there are some kind of normative pattern someplace that the rituals are going to instill in you so that you can perfectly replicate those patterns. The argument on the contrary is very explicitly, you are taking these actions and slowly, through their accumulation, you are trying to create, construct, develop a world in which humans will be transformed to interact better. And the vision is very much, it's sort of, you build it up over time. I would like to argue, this is very much the kind of vision that you are seeing being picked up on in these sacrifice chapters. Very much the argument I would like to put here is what's intriguing about the chapters is very much like the Xing Ziming Chu, what they're not doing. They are not giving you some kind of foundational vision. It's very much, the whole argument, in fact, is one of these things have developed, here is why they work, and the work always comes down to the kind of world that we begin to construct by doing it, and there is consistently a sense that that work needs to be ongoing because when it's not done well, or as times change, it needs to be done differently, it will actually very clearly lead you astray. To pick up just on, now, finally, a few examples, the Li Yun, which has been mentioned, so I'll be extremely brief in it too. Here it is very clearly put as, ritual I mean, and sacrifice more particularly, as part and parcel of a larger constructionist view. It is very explicitly compared with the creation of agriculture, and the argument is ritual is doing the same thing as agriculture. So very quickly, the argument, of course, is in the world of Da Tong, everything interacts perfectly. In that world, however, of course, humans cannot flourish because we have no agriculture, we have no food, we have no food that we can create, we eat berries by implication, etc. We have no shelter, we have no clothing. Sages, seeing these problems, start creating specific inventions to solve each of the issues we just mentioned. Ritual is seen as one of these to start developing better forms of interaction. The text is very explicit that ritual already is part of the problem than what will happen, because once you start creating ritual, what you start doing is connecting humans to other things, including dead things, that it will construct into ancestors. Once that happens, you start getting the construction of lineages. And now, Confucius looking back says, the period of loss has been one in which you have these competing lineages battling for power, and now we need to take these rituals that were correctly created, obviously it's not against ritual, but reutilize them now to pull humans back together into some kind of larger unity, but of course a unity that would include all the inventions that have happened since. So we're not returning to the Da Tong, we're trying to build upon all of these inventions. And then the text will go on to say explicitly, think of ritual, therefore, as identical to the world of agriculture, where we domesticate the world. So you know, we're domesticating animals, we domesticate the grains, we build up an entire world based upon seasonal change, we kill animals that don't fit into this, we clear fields to make this possible. So we transform the world to create a world of coherence in which, unlike in the Da Tong world, in which humans can fully flourish. Think of ritual the same way. So what rulers are doing with ritual is utilizing, domesticating the qing of the humans to create a world of unity. Again, it can be misdone. The argument is it has been misdone, and now it needs to be reworked in a new way to create some larger form of unity. Implicit in the argument, in other words, is that it's an ongoing work. We are constantly constructing worlds in which people can actually interact better, and often those very acts of construction will lead to the problems that then need to be addressed by the latter generations. So again, it's not a foundational argument. The move is consistently one of, it's an accumulation of inventions working to building something better, requiring constant work. To give another very quick example before I get to the much larger point, When you then work out the details of the sacrifice chapters in terms of the world it's trying to create, the world it's trying to create is one in which we will construct the entire world, to go back to the language of the Li Yun, as a single family. Again, it's not literally a single family. This is the world you construct. So, to give you a very concrete example from several playing out in several of these sacrifice chapters, the argument will be, to return very quickly to the mourning materials, N-I-N-G, in the mourning materials, you begin with someone dying, of course. The first set of rituals involve acting as if that person is alive. There is then the ritual moment when you move from mourning to sacrifice. At that moment, it's a very distinctive moment, you are no longer allowed to cry within the ritual context, because at that moment you are worshiping an ancestor. It will then take you through what the sacrifice will entail in terms of how it's going to alter your qing. And one of the things it will do is build upon earlier personator rites, in which it will say, what you're doing is a series of role reversals to alter people's qing, to create this better form of interaction. And going very explicitly, the move here will be to say, so someone has died, the chief mourner is the son of that person who has died, so if it's a ruler, it is the son of the previous ruler. The personator would then normatively be the eldest son of that now living chief mourner, so the grandson of the person who has passed away. In the ritual context, that personator comes in. This is the grandson. He enters the ritual space. He is now within the ritual space, his own grandfather. He, the grandson, but now he's the grandfather, takes the place of the power, right? So he is sitting on the throne facing south. His father now is looking north again at his own son, but it was the person who was previously his own father. You then normatively play out the relations of normatively what a father-son relationship should be. So the son, although it's the father, but ritually speaking, the son giving obeisance to his father, which is his own son. And through this means, the argument is, each of them are learning the proper relationship of father and son. You then do this exact same set of rituals with everything, including those things that won't actually be involved. So ultimately, this even includes heaven, although heaven's not coming down and doing role reversals, obviously. But the argument is, once you do this going upwards, heaven is on top. The ruler is, ritually speaking, his son, hence the son of heaven, a title that the text will explicitly take on. And the argument is, the leftovers from this personator ritual are then ritually given to the rest of the realm, I mean, not literally, but ritually given to the rest of the realm, ultimately leading to the same logic we've been mentioning, to the ruler being the father and mother of the people. And again, so all of the clans, therefore, relate to the ruler as their father and mother. The ruler is also the son of heaven, and therefore, as such, he mediates all of the things of the world, linking them together into one single family. Now, the larger point here is, I think, fairly clear, but let me lay it out. Obviously, that's not the world we live in, right? The claim is not people will literally believe that their ruler is their father and mother. You are actually not being called upon to believe that heaven, that the ruler, existing ruler, is literally a son of heaven. There are many ritual systems in the world, I'll get to momentarily, that will make that call. You are not being called upon, on the contrary, here, to believe it. The argument for the text is, if this works, and the text clearly thinks it does, it's these sets of sacrifices are creating a world in which people will, if they are doing them properly, learn through these endless role reversals, movements, etc., to alter their qing, and again, to get back to something I touched on very briefly, to extend the normative relationships they are developing in these rituals, say of father-sons, then worked out upwards and downwards, to being extended to include everything. If you're lower, extended up to the ruler. If you're the ruler, extended up to heaven and extended downward toward the population that becomes his children. You, in other words, going back to the argument of the Li Yun, you construct a world that functions as if it were a single family. Now, to touch very briefly on the larger implications of this, so why some scholars has been mentioned, developed an argument saying, if you really take this seriously as a theoretical argument, what it's really saying here is something very different from, say, models of rituals based upon socialization. So, very, very broadly speaking, many of our assumptions about rituals are trying to socialize people into a way of thinking. So they're trying to socialize people into a single worldview. So if you're an anthropologist, you go to look at the ritual system, and that will tell you this is what people are being socialized to believe in. So you do a very brilliant, if you're a Geertz, for example, a brilliant symbolic analysis of visions of cyclical time and the complexities of the way cycles work within a ritual system, the assumption being this is what this is telling of the worldview because you're being socialized to believe this. Now, that argument is about Bali, and I have no idea if Geertz is right about Bali, but looking at this material from the Li Qi, what is intriguing in the sacrifice chapters is there, of course, the move is very different. You're not being called upon to believe this as a worldview. In fact, I'll even put it slightly strongly, certainly at least if you're at the higher levels of this, one of the rulers involved in this, or what it will call a sage, usually who is not a ruler, but presumably an advisor, you shouldn't believe it, right? I mean, because the key is precisely you need to endlessly be working with this, otherwise it will fall apart, as we hear in the Li Yun, happened for several centuries of lineages simply competing with each other because of this ritual system. And so it works because you're constructing a world and you're endlessly working with that world being constructed to create better interactions, the sense being that you'll never get a perfect world, which is why, as in Li Yun, it's explicitly said, this is not the Datong, right? This is an invented, constructed world. And that is the work you're doing. It's kind of the disjunction between that ritual world and the world outside that you're endlessly concerned with. And then let me just conclude by saying, then of course what is intriguing is the later history of this. So once this is then put together in an argument, in a book, but part of a larger argument saying, this is a vision of ritual during the Western Han, this is being put together, that we should in fact be putting into place in opposition to the ritual systems that were actively being created at the time, then of course you kind of have a problem, which is the Li Qi gives you very little evidence as to physically what you do. I mean, I've given you a bunch of examples of the ritual system, but in terms of all of the details, you're not going to get very much, which is why you get the intriguing moving into the Eastern Han, and I'll be very brief here, because Michael Allen has a beautiful paper on this, when you get these active attempts to say, yes, but how would you actually build a ritual system this way? And of course, Zheng Shiren, one of the most, by far, influential commentators from the Eastern Han, his hermeneutic move is essentially to say, what the Li Qi is talking about is a ritual system that really did exist in the Western Zhou, it really was there, and we're going to try to pick up all the evidence that we can from any text, so you have a normative body of text, but other texts too can be used, and since you're assuming there was a world there of a coherent ritual system, if you use all of this material, you can work out what that means. So if you have one text that says, in this ritual, you walk three steps this way, and another text says you walk three steps that way. You put this together and say, first you walk three steps this way, and then you walk three steps that way. In other words, you have to try to take this material and put it together. It's an incredible effort and incredibly influential because once it's done, it gives you this very powerful system. It's important to remember when we're reading the Li Qi, as we often do through Zheng Shiren, note, you don't really get that in the Li Qi. I mean, the Li Qi material itself it gives you very little detail. It's really at this larger sort of theoretical argument about what ritual is and why you should be employing it. And it gives you, I think, tellingly very little detail. So let me just simply conclude by saying, I think part of what is intriguing about these materials is that it gives us a glimpse of this much larger debate about ritual, both the texts themselves, the way they are being read, and later the way they're being appropriated and utilized when you actually try to create a ritual system based upon views like this. And as such, I think it is part of something, along with the excavated materials, the translation projects going on, it is part of, I think, a very exciting moment when we're finally beginning to get a sense of this larger debate, historically very important to reconstruct that, and yes, at a larger theoretical level, I think you really get some visions here that should be thought of from a larger comparative context in terms of the implications about how we should be thinking about ritual. Great, thank you so much.
Yeah, so now I understand why Michael Pewitt didn't want to talk during question time, because, you know, he has everything to say now. You know,
definitely not.
Right, thank you. I was really interested in your idea of this process of pulling out, you see.
Yes.
And in a way, I mean, you were sort of fleshing out what Professor Yao was telling us, previously about these key terms, you see. So it's a process of pulling out from Qing, let's say, human emotions, to Yi, sense of right, both R-I-T-E, ritual, or right, R-I-G-H-T, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, you have a process that you should really label as shun, you know, that is in the flow, you know.
Yeah.
Because Professor Yao did underline the fact that li is about shun, going in the flow,
yes,
as opposed to ni, you know, sort of going against the flow, and so you have this continuous process from ben, you know, the root precisely, you know, to zhi, you know, this framing, you know, and I think you really flesh it out very, very, very nicely.